Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Tribune Weekly. I am joined by Ross Dunbar once again, just the two of us, Ross. Last week it was Davis and John, this week it's you and I.
Yeah.
Tag teaming this podcast right now, but busy time of the year, so...
I have to say, your kitchen looks lovely.
Yes, we are in the exquisite settings of my kitchen. So instead of maybe hopping between the match days that are coming pretty thick and fast right now, ahead of the Christmas break, we wanted to take... you know, a stop. We want to pump the brakes for a minute and take a look at what's going on at Wolfsburg. We did talk about Wolfsburg a couple of weeks ago, but news has came through now that Klaus Allofs, the club sporting director, director of football, whatever you want to call him, has left. And I think in many ways it probably sums up an era at Wolfsburg. So we want to talk about Wolfsburg, the idea of the Bayern Hunter, as they're usually called in Germany, and whether Wolfsburg can get back into top four, if not, challenge Bayern, and if not, then who will? Ross, let's kick things off with Wolfsburg then. What do you make of Klaus Allofs sacking, and where does it put Wolfsburg right now?
Yeah, well, without kind of going over old ground from the last podcast we spoke about Wolfsburg, Klaus Allofs, you know, has done a pretty fantastic job at Wolfsburg to keep them kind of stable in the top half of the Bundesliga. And I wrote on Twitter a couple of days ago, actually, that I find the timing of it to be very unusual. You know, it's worth noting that on the day that we're recording, the day after Klaus Allofs' sacking, they have spent 12 million on a player from Ajax.
Yep.
So from that perspective, I don't really understand how that could have happened if the sporting director has been out of a job for the last couple of days. But at this point, for Wolfsburg, they're in deep shit. Like, they are. I mean, like, that's a simple way to put it. I think of all the teams that are in relegation trouble, I think Wolfsburg are probably the big team, or not the big team, but the team that should be doing better, who are in the most danger. Hamburg, we spoke about last pod, have got the strength to get out of it. Mm. But with Wolfsburg, they're, you know, this kind of instability, I don't see how this can be a positive thing. I think at this time of the year, when you really need to get results, you really need to plan for the next transfer window and going into even next season. I mean, let's say Wolfsburg accept that they're in relegation trouble. Any, you know, well-managed organisation would say, okay, we don't like it, but we would start thinking about, you know, planning for maybe being in the second division. And to get rid of your sporting director, you know, in the second week of December, I find that to be a very strange decision. And I feel like you said in your article on Deutsche Welle that I think this could be the end of an era for Wolfsburg.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I actually totally agree. I mean, Wolfsburg had a lot of trouble, but I don't understand what Klaus Allofs' departure helps there. I don't think the style of the players... I mean, if you think about what he's maybe in charge of doing, and that's predominantly speaking to the press and buying players, that isn't the key issue for me, in my opinion. Well, I mean, there are issues there, but I don't think that's the main problem. The main problem is that they've got a coach in Ismail who doesn't look like he can win a game. He doesn't look like he's going to be this young, exciting youth coach who galvanises the squad like we've seen elsewhere in the Bundesliga. And the whole club look out of ideas. And like in the article I wrote for Deutsche Welle this week, my argument was that it's not Klaus Allofs that's failed Wolfsburg, it's Wolfsburg that failed Klaus Allofs, because in the last year or two we've really seen, you know, the stability of the club fall apart. And I think there's no surprise that it kind of parallels quite well with this scandal at Volkswagen right now. I think for the last year now, since maybe January, Allofs, every time he speaks to the press, he's always looked quite, you know, lacking in energy, lacking in hope and any real desire. And a couple of months ago, they asked him about this Volkswagen thing and whether they're going to be able to fund Wolfsburg like they had before, amidst reports in the German media that the funding will be cut hugely. And he said it remains to be seen whether Volkswagen will, you know, stick to their deal. And he just looked like a guy who knew that there's a tsunami coming. And maybe he's decided to fall on his sword, but for me it just feels like he's been made a scapegoat here when there's really much deeper problems at play here. I think it's quite evident well, maybe not evident. I'm drawing conclusions from things that haven't been confirmed yet, especially in the article. But the point I make is that if you look at the way the club have dealt in the transfer market in the last 12 months, and that involves selling De Bruyne and Perisic, which for good money, but they still sold them nonetheless, and they used that money to buy the likes of Draxler and other players. And then this summer as well, they actually made a profit from the transfer market, which I think is the first time, aside from last year when they sold De Bruyne for a huge amount of money, they've done that since Klaus Allofsson came in. So if you look at maybe a chart of Wolfsburg's net spend from the very start when they were moving up league table, it was, you know, there was a huge deficit because, you know, they were spending money, they had plenty of money to spend. It's now got to a point where they've obviously been told that if they want to buy players, they have to sell players first. So that suggests that the funding has been cut, in my opinion. And just the way that Ismail's came in as well. I mean, the Bundesliga is a great league for bringing through youth coaches. It's usually a commendable option when the likes of, you know, maybe like Lucien Favre goes, you bring in Schubert, and there's other exceptions. He's maybe not the best example, but there are examples of when a youth coach can step into the role left by the first team coach. I don't think that was ever the case at Wolfsburg. Ismail came in for maybe 1, 2, 3 interim games, and there was no suggestion that he was this young tactician who was just waiting for his chance. To me, it looked like they're thinking this is the cheap option. Now, they might have a coach in line in January or in May. They might think we've got this big guy coming in. We'll hold tight. That's fine. But as things stand, it looks like Wolfsburg are seriously tightening their belt. And I think, as I say in the article, I think history, when we look back on this in 5 years' time, and Wolfsburg are a much smaller industry, they're a much smaller club than they were 2 or 3 years ago when they were challenging Bayern for certain trophies, I think we'll probably look back and think, yeah, you know what, Klaus Allofs was dealing with much smaller budgets from year on, year on, and when he left was just, you know, he was like the last rat off a sinking ship, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how I think about it right now. I mean, I know, as we say, literally an hour before we started recording this, they signed this kid from Ajax for about 12 million euros. Some people might suggest they've still got money to spend, but I mean, I think they finished the transfer window with either plus or minus £3 million. So I think they might have some money there going, but I don't expect... And that money, the money they spent to buy this kid in Ajax may be entirely based on the fact that they're probably going to sell Draxler in January. But just kind of taking a step back, Ross, does this... Do you think this is the end of Wolfsburg as a top four side for the foreseeable future?
I think that's the obvious conclusion. I mean, I agree with everything you said there, and it's at this juncture for Wolfsburg when they are underperforming on the pitch with a very, very good squad. We actually went through the squad before we came on here, and it probably still is a top four squad.
Yeah.
The decision to get rid of the sporting director is very unusual. I'm kind of beginning to think that maybe something has gone on in the background. Maybe there's been a disagreement about something. Maybe there's been a disagreement about the Draxler situation, because that seemed to flare up in the last few weeks. Because,
well, for people who don't know, he spoke out about not being able to move, and then he was taken out of the squad
essentially
entirely.
On strike.
Yeah. So for people who maybe don't pay attention to Bundesliga from one week to the next.
But like you said, I mean, like during the last 5 years, four years probably is probably more accurate. Wolfsburg have grown as a club. They have signed talents that they can develop. I think you made a good tweet actually that Klaus Allofs will be remembered as the guy who let Kevin De Bruyne go rather than actually take him from Chelsea, right? I mean, that's
unfairly, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I totally agree. But even like the way that Wolfsburg have gone into, you know, the Bundesliga 2 years ago, they were second place, they won the German Cup, then they went into the Champions League, got to the quarterfinals and lost to Real Madrid. Their youth academy is very, very good. They've won the German Youth Championship in the last few years. The women's team is exceptional. Again, that falls under Klaus Allofs' remit. I know that that's not a priority thing, but in the whole picture of Wolfsburg as a football club, it's another thing that it's another thing on his CV that he's built this this data department in the club. I think, I'm very concerned about Wolfsburg, and I said on the last podcast that if they go down, I think they'll find it very hard to get back up. I made the comparison to Stuttgart, who
looked like they might come back up.
Yeah, when they went down, they had the raw foundations already there. I know the club was a complete shitstorm essentially, but they had, you know, a fan base that was kind of apathetic, but they got right behind the team. They get 55,000 pretty much every game now in the second division. They've got really, really good young players. They've obviously added to that this year. They've brought in a great young coach. the raw foundations are there for Stuttgart to be a top club in the next few years. With Wolfsburg, they don't have a solid fan base. I mean, it essentially is people who live in Wolfsburg.
Mm.
Probably, without wanting to generalise, probably a large proportion of that are Volkswagen employees.
Mm.
They have no loyalty to the VfL Wolfsburg. Their loyalty, man, it's just not there. So if they go down, are these people going to come out for these games that are maybe not as attractive? You know, when they do, if they do go down, the number of players who are going to leave, I think it's going to be huge because, again, like the Draxler situation, the players have no loyalty to the club.
Well, we saw that at Stuttgart when they went down as an exodus of Kostic, Didavi, blah, blah, blah.
But you had solid professionals as well, like Christian Gentner and guys like that who stayed with the club because there's a sense of loyalty to Stuttgart. It's a big club, big fans, there's an identity there. With Wolfsburg, I just don't see that.
Mm.
And I've made this analogy a few times that I think Wolfsburg is a bit of a toxic club. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I just think that the whole atmosphere around it doesn't seem to me like the players are going there to work really hard and to develop. Kevin De Bruyne probably is an exception because he was probably driven himself to be... Yeah. You know, a top player, probably to show Mourinho at the time what he could do. But with other players, I don't see that. And my concern would be that if they go down without a sporting director, without any kind of plan, that might be the end of Wolfsburg for quite a while.
Maybe just finish on Wolfsburg in this point. Do you think for a brief period in time they were the second best club in Germany? I mean, the argument I kind of made in the article was that they really, I think, I mean, I'm sure Klaus Allofs' his finest moment, perhaps, since leaving Werder Bremen at least, was that the way that Wolfsburg were able to step into that hole left by Dortmund because, you know, people, we don't really forget, but Pep Guardiola is given so much credit for the three titles he's won, and a lot of people don't really put an asterisk next to that by saying, yeah, but he won that when Dortmund were really going through transition from Klopp leaving and Tuchel taking over. And in that period of time, sure, Wolfsburg maybe didn't challenge for three titles, but they still won a German Cup. They beat Bayern in the Super Cup. They reached stages of the Champions League that they've never been to before. So, I mean, as we try to do, like in the history of the Bundesliga, at least the modern league, it seems to be like there's always at least one club who kind of step up above the rest and challenge Bayern. Do you think it's fair to say Wolfsburg were that club for a couple of seasons?
I think so. I mean, like you said, I mean, the Bundesliga has always had that kind of cyclical element to it, where, you know, there's always been a team every two or three years who competes. Normally, in the past, it's been a team that would win the championship.
Mm.
Kaiserslautern, Bremen, Stuttgart, then on to Dortmund, and then Wolfsburg. But with Bayern being so strong, nobody's really had a chance of winning the title. And I think I would say that Wolfsburg, in that probably that 18-month spell with De Bruyne, you know, when they finished second, you know, DFB Pokal, I think they only finished maybe 9 points off the top in that season. Going into the Champions League, their focus was obviously on being a Champions League team, and to get to the quarterfinals in only your second ever appearance in the competition, I think is quite impressive. So yeah, I would say that I think in the future is how we'll probably define Wolfsburg in the last 18 months. But
just when you were talking, I remember like the summer, the off season after that season they finished second. I remember we're discussing our previews for the next season.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us had Wolfsburg as second.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, obviously, they sold De Bruyne in the 11th hour and things completely changed. But
yeah,
I think going into that next season, a lot of people thought Wolfsburg were not only going to stay second, but actually push on and really challenge Bayern.
Yeah.
So
and the thing that, like,
it's going to be one of the great what-ifs, I guess. Of the
Course. But it's just sad. I mean, I think if anything, it shows that... And I don't want to take this into another 50+1 discussion, but I think it shows you the value of having, you know, an identity, the value of having a structure and having that kind of continuity in place. Hoffenheim is a perfect example. They've had that for the last few years, whereas I think Wolfsburg have made a bad decision and I think they might pay the consequence for that.
Yeah, our colleague Matt Ford at Deutsche Welle actually wrote a piece about that a few weeks ago about how what Volkswagen in Wolfsburg might ultimately prove is that if you fund a club that doesn't have, you know, the structural backing of fans and things, then once the funding goes, then things begin to fall apart. But we'll see. We'll wait to see what happens if that's the case of Wolfsburg, or if we're just maybe over dramatizing things. But staying on the topic of these Bayern hunters, moving if we accept that Wolfsburg are no more for the foreseeable future, it brings up the interesting topic of who can challenge Bayern or who will. And I think we're both agreed that there are maybe two clubs here. Let's start with the first one, who, in my opinion, are Borussia Dortmund. They're probably the most obvious one. Ross, if you can, do you think Dortmund have the capacity to challenge Bayern like they did under Jurgen Klopp? If so, why? If not, why?
No, I don't, I'm not sure they do. I mean, I said it this...
Not just this season, of course.
Yeah, I mean, the major caveat, really, to any kind of Bayern chaser is that nobody has the financial power of Bayern Munich. So they're always going to be the favourites. They're always going to be the best resourced team in the league. That's just a fact. But I don't think that necessarily means that they're always going to win.
Mm.
I mean, Bayern having more money means that they are better than Augsburg. But in relative terms, by having more money, it doesn't automatically mean they're better than Dortmund or Leipzig, right? I mean, it's relative. And I think with Dortmund, they have a bit of a dilemma right now, I think, because they are going through this transition phase where they are buying a lot of unproven, you know, kind of players with high development potential. I'm not sure that's going to be enough for them to be a consistent team at the top of the Bundesliga. And we can see that right now. They're outside of the top four, but the sixth right now, yep, at this stage, with two games to go in the first half of the season. I expect them not to challenge for the third. I didn't expect them to be this far down.
Mm.
And you look at teams like Hertha, you look at teams like Cologne, like Hoffenheim, who have got established professionals. Not saying that that's, you know, a kind of reflection on their ability, but they don't have players who have been there and done it. They've got the experience at the highest level. And I think, you know, with Dortmund this season, there's been a lot of discussion around depth and rotations and stuff like that. And I think you can see in the quality of depth that they have right now that they don't have enough, I think, to be a Bayern challenger in the next year.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, actually. I think we were all willing to give Thomas Tuchel the point of view, or the benefit of doubt, rather, in terms of he had to rebuild a squad, lost key players, signed a lot of players this summer to make up for that. But things haven't exactly gone to plan. I tweeted this out a few weeks last week, I think, or actually just after the weekend when they drew again Cologne. I mean, when do we stop giving Tuchel the point of view or the benefit of doubt? When do fans start thinking, like you just said, yeah, I didn't think we'd be challenging Bayern, but I didn't think we'd be sitting sixth in December?
Yeah, you're right. It's a good point. I'm not sure I would apply the blame to Tuchel, though. Obviously, it's Mikhail Zorc and Vatska who are the kind of bosses there. And I kind of sympathise with Tuchel because there's been guys like Guerrero who showed so much potential at the start of the season. He's just fallen off the radar the last few weeks because he's been injured.
Mm.
Mario Götze has been injured. Schürrle has been injured.
Weigl looks tired.
So you can take kind of two kind of sides to this. You could either say that that's Thomas Tuchel's fault, that they're injured. You know, maybe that you could say that there's something not right in Dortmund's preparation and recovery, that these players keep getting injured.
Mm.
Or you could say, well, the board probably should have given him more established professionals rather than guys like Emery Moore and Dembele and Marino, who have, for me, in my opinion, I don't think they have really hit the ground running to the level that we expected.
Mm.
And I don't see enough evidence to suggest that that's going to change in the next 12 months.
Yeah, I mean, I think on paper, Dortmund are clearly the best club, the best equipped club to really challenge Bayern, unless a team like Hamburg or maybe Schalke in the future really got their act together and really start taking potential of, you know, the resources around them. Then it's Borussia Dortmund on paper. Where I think things might fall apart for them are at the individual level. I think Dortmund are making enough money. I think they've got the fan support. They've obviously got, you know, the youth structure in place to an extent. But I think what it really falls down to is, A, you need a coach who can really galvanise a team and push them up a next level, like Jurgen Klopp was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think they've done the best they can in Thomas Tuchel. He, like you said, I think we are still going to give him the benefit of the doubt because they did lose the spine of the team this summer. This is another transition period, and he, at the moment, his squad just seemed to be struggling with inconsistency, which seems quite characteristic of a team of young players who haven't really figured out their best squad yet. But if they are to challenge Bayern, we really need Tuchel as well as the squad that they've got to really hit the level that Jurgen Klopp hit. Can he do that? I genuinely don't know. I think the signs are there. He hasn't done it yet at Dortmund, but again, I can give him the benefit out there. The other person who I think gets in the way of it is Vatska. I think actually he's done a lot to make a lot of money for Dortmund. I don't think there's any denying that the way that the club have grown over the last 10 or 15 years or since the financial troubles they were under is just tremendous. You know, they've gone from the brink of extinction to Champions League finals. And along the way, they've signed good players. They've brought in Jurgen Klopp, obviously. But I still, every time I think about Dortmund, I keep coming back to the way they sell players. And I can't get past that. They sell players unlike any other ambitious team in Europe, in my opinion. Now, I keep looking at a team like Atletico Madrid. Now, I know there are factors in play in Spain that play a part. For example, there are certain agents who make sure that Madrid have key players every season. There's a whole tax situation, which I know you don't like getting into, and I won't get into. but Spanish football has been supported by the Spanish government. Anyway, but Atletico Madrid don't sell players the way Dortmund sell players. Now, I know there's a lot of people thinking, oh, what about Douglas Costa? What about this guy? What about that guy? Yeah, they do sell players eventually, but they make sure they have others in place. And they don't just sign some 22-year-old to replace Douglas Costa or something. They sign proven players. And I don't see Dortmund doing that. You know,
yeah, I agree, yeah.
They sell Mats Hummels, they sign Mark Bartra. We all thought Bartra was a good player, but it's a bit silly to rely on him.
Yeah.
They sell Gundogan, they bring in two or three decent players, but Tuchel still has to start the season relying on Weigl and Castro, you know. Aubameyang might go, Royce probably won't go, but if Aubameyang goes, is he going to be replaced by some 22-year-old kid from France? This is the key problem with Dortmund for me. It's not really Tuchel. It's not the players they have. It's Vatska. Because although he's very good at one thing, in buying and selling players, or making money, I think that part of the game gets in the way, because sometimes when they're looking at these selling players, he's more interested in getting the key amount. Now, the only person I can think of, the only player in recent times who bucked that trend was Lewandowski, because they said, we're not going to sell him, we're going to hold him to the very last point. Now, I think that's probably because Lewandowski is far and above the best player Dortmund ever had, so that was obvious. But in terms of Götze, Gundogan, Kagawa, Aubameyang, you know, there's a whole list of people. Vatska seemed to be more interested in getting the very best price for them rather than saying, we're not selling club.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that, and that's a great point, actually. I think you're right. I mean, and what I was going to say was, I don't think it's unrealistic to say that next summer Aubameyang and Julian Weigl will go.
Hmm.
I mean, Julian Weigl's interest from other clubs like Man City is serious. It's that serious interest. With Aubameyang, we know that it's been touted before that he would leave, and at this current rate of scoring, I think it's inevitable.
Hmm.
Are Dortmund in a position to replace those two players? Like you said, it seems to be that they are losing players at a higher rate than they're actually buying in. Do you know what I mean? It's a very odd balance. I do have sympathy for Dortmund, because if you look at this summer, I think most people expected one player to go.
Yeah.
Gundogan, right? I think everyone knew that Gundogan was going to go. That's fine. The Mats Hummels situation emerged quite late on, just before the German Cup final.
Mm.
I think that's more of a reflection on his personality, actually, than the club. My opinion, I don't know, you're looking at me a little bit as if
I know exactly what you're saying. But Mats Hummels is a really good example. Mats Hummels probably said to Dortmund, I want to leave. But it's up to Dortmund and it's up to Vatska to say, I don't care.
Yeah, you're right. I agree. Yeah, you know? Totally agree. Dortmund could have just said, no, you're staying, you're the captain. And they've done their bit. They've done their part. And it would look bad on Hummels if he doesn't want to play to the level. And Mkhitaryan, for example, strange one. Because everyone expected him to stay after such a phenomenal season. They didn't really make a great price for him, in my opinion. I think he's much, much better than what they got for him from Manchester United. And again, I think that caught everyone by surprise.
Just the Mkhitaryan thing, the interesting thing about that is that I've heard from one source that Man United actually were already courting his agent a season before he left. His agent was at Man United games at Old Trafford. And I've also heard that within the squad, that nobody within the squad expected him to go.
Yeah.
And So the Mkhitaryan one seemed really fishy because that seems like that literally came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
and it seemed to go from within the space like 3 days, he went from being a Dortmund player and staying over summer to right, he's off.
Yeah, and I think given his character that we all know, I think it was right that the club took the money, because if you have an unhappy player like Mkhitaryan, who I think
they only just got him playing well.
I think there's a lot of powerful people behind Mkhitaryan, agents and advisors and consultants and stuff like that. And I think
he's got a very infamous agent.
Yeah, I mean, not really. Not him particularly, but other people as well. I think to have a player there who's unhappy, that would have been a negative thing for the squad. So they made the right decision there. But like I said, I mean, we're at a point now where this rate of player sales is getting so aggressive that players like Aubameyang and Weigl could realistically go next season. And I don't think signing players like Sebastian Rode...
Well, there will be people listening right now. Sorry to cut in. You're right. Rode's not a solution. He's just a decent buy, you know, squad player. A lot of people will be screaming at the phones right now saying Weigl is apparently going to sign a new deal in January, so we should consider that. But that doesn't stop him.
Yeah, that doesn't stop him leaving.
Now, the other point I was going to make as well is there's a lot of people, there's probably a lot of Dortmund fans saying, you know, it's within the club's best interest for us to get the best value for these players. And I can understand that. But consider it from this point of view, the first time Bayern came looking for one of Dortmund's players was, what, Mario Götze? Imagine they said, no, you're not getting him. And then they said, right, we'll sign him on a pre-contract. They speak to Götze's people and they'll say, I'll wait.
Yeah.
They make him wait, right? So maybe he stays at Dortmund for another year and a half. I can't remember what the contract situation was, but he got a lot of money from him, so he wasn't expiring. Bayern get the man eventually, but it's not on their terms. Then Lewandowski comes along and it's the exact same situation. They have to wait another year. Eventually, if Dortmund keep playing this game, Bayern will stop going to them for their players, because if Dortmund have a very simple solution or very simple status in mind saying, we're not going to play by anything, we don't care if it means an extra 30 million or any money, you're not getting this guy until his contract runs out. And eventually, every time Bayern are running up a shortlist every summer, they'll look at a player that they want from Dortmund and think, ah, but that means another 18 months till we get him. And I think that, I know that sounds really simplistic, but I think something as simple as that really makes a big difference. And it isn't just to do with Bayern. If it's Man City raiding their squad every year, if it's Barcelona raiding their squad every year, Vatska can make it pretty... I mean, I read that, this could be nonsense, but I read that Real Madrid have a first buy option on Aubameyang. And that could, and I, although it's completely on, I mean, it's reported, but it's not proven at all, I could believe that. I can totally believe Vatska saying, totally believe Vatska saying, yeah, you know what, when we decide to sell him, you can make a bid. Because I think that's, I can't fault the guy, he's a really good businessman, but I think that's the kind of, it's a mentality that gets in the way of Dortmund. Right. And you now have players coming to Dortmund thinking, I'll be here 2 or 3 years and I'll be off to Man City.
Yeah.
Which I don't think you get athletes.
But the thing in there, like you said, that idea of being very rigid and, you know, saying we have our player, you know, you stump up a ridiculous amount of money and then we'll sell him or we'll keep him. But I think what's in their control is the players that they sign.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't want to pick on Götze and Schürrle in particular, because Götze, I think, has actually done really, really well this season, all things considered. Mm-hmm. Schürrle, I wasn't convinced by. Guys like Dembele, I wasn't convinced by. I heard from another top club that Dembele wasn't at the right standard for them. I'm not going to name the club, but it's on probably the same level as Dortmund. Now, why are Dortmund making that signing? I'm not too sure about that. And I think, had they signed possibly a Kevin Folland, who hasn't been great at Leverkusen, but he's an established Bundesliga player, right? I mean, he's a proven player who you know can do a job in the league.
And when you speak to, I mean, I've said this in the podcast before, I spoke to people at Leverkusen and they genuinely are convinced that they've got Volland for 8 years, you know, unless he scores 30 goals a season and Real Madrid come in from.
Yeah.
But they're convinced that when he signed these guys, they've got them for the long term. I don't think that's the case at Dortmund. I mean, I know we keep mentioning Atletico Madrid. Another club, just to kind of even things out, are probably like Juventus, perhaps. You know, now, a lot of Dortmund fans might think, oh, God, Juventus or Juventus. In terms of money, they're no different from Dortmund. They're not making that much. I mean, sure, since they did the treble or they got to the Champions League final, they made a bit more money last season.
Yeah, but we'd all rely on the Champions League.
Yeah, before they got to the Champions League final, they were Schalke were in touching distance of Juventus financially, so Dortmund certainly were.
Yeah.
Juventus are a really good example of they know their market. They know they're not going to be able to hold on to players forever when Real Madrid come calling, but they make sure they get the best out of them. And I just think that's the one aspect of Dortmund which holds them back from long-term, really challenging Bayern Munich.
People talk about quote-unquote selling clubs. I think right now Borussia Dortmund are a selling club mentally. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that that kind of atmosphere, I think, exists at Dortmund. And right now, as we stand, I think the team has a lot of potential, the coach has potential, but if players keep leaving and the players who come in aren't good enough, then they're not gonna be good enough to compete.
And you know what? Tuchel's not gonna stick around if his best players are getting sold every summer as well.
I think he's getting growingly frustrated. I think you see a lot of rumblings around the club that he's not happy with.
Well, in the press today,
yeah,
he's having to go, or so Bild report that he's shouting at Götze, yeah, and then he told off Guerreiro and Royce and maybe can't remember who else, maybe Dembele. So, you know,
yeah,
it's not, I'm sure at the back of his head he maybe thinks that too.
However, the last thing you should say about Dortmund is that they're 2 points off third place, and if they finish in third behind Bayern and Leipzig and they do okay in the Champions League, then it's a successful season.
Yeah. That's a good caveat, so we don't have our flats burnt down by Dortmund fans. But, as you mentioned, the other team who I think probably the fairer alternatives to Dortmund, if when we consider the next Bayern hunters, are, of course, RB Leipzig, who 6 months ago were playing in the second division. They've since got promoted, and with a young, fantastic squad of players, they have shot right up to the top of the table. They currently sit second after an interesting setback against Ralf Hasenhüttl's old team Ingolstadt, but they're on points with Bayern. They're beating everyone in front of them, not everyone, but mostly everyone. And this seems to be just a start, Ross.
I can imagine people are going to be shouting down their phone saying, I don't like Leipzig. Okay, yeah, we don't like Red Bull and 50+1, right? I get it. Forget it. Let's mature and get rid of that point. Anyway, point is, they have a great set of players. Forsberg, for example, I think is an outstanding player. Timo Werner has come on to a fantastic game. Sivic in midfield, the Austrian players, really, really impressive young talent. And they've got a great coach. So the foundation for success are there. I mean, I think we're only at the beginning of RB Leipzig's attempts to be the top team in Germany. I mean, I know that they've come out of the traps really rapidly in the last 6 months, but I think there's still a long way to go. Red Bull are backing them to the tune of 100 million euros per year, by what we understand. The stadium aspect, they rent it at the moment. They've got plans for a 75,000 seat stadium in the city. The city backs them, and that's one thing people I don't think appreciate about RB Leipzig. Leipzig is right behind them, so you'd have to say that in this kind of landscape of who's chasing Bayern, the pendulum is totally with RB Leipzig right now. I think Champions League football would be a massive step forward for them, not just in terms of playing at that level, but I think in terms of being self-sustainable, being able to attract Champions League standard players. I know that Ralf Rangnick says that we live within our means and we don't want to be signing top class players. Eventually there will come a point where they might end up doing that, spending 20 million, 25 million. That time is going to happen, and I just think that the manner of the way that the RB Leipzig is structured, I think they're almost certainly going to be around for the foreseeable future.
Why aren't Leipzig another Hoffenheim? Why aren't Leipzig, you know, they're not the first club to be in the Bundesliga who are owned by a football club, and we've seen the likes of Leverkusen, Wolfsburg, Hoffenheim. I mean, Wolfsburg is, we're currently in the trend of them going back down, but we've always seen them all hit a peak and then kind of settle in their current position in their standing in German football. What's to say Leipzig aren't just on a blip right now?
It's a good question. I think the intentions of the club itself are to be organic and self-sustainable. I think someone like Ralf Rangnick is a highly respected figure in German football. He's been innovative in the past. At Hoffenheim, he was the guy who essentially set up the whole football structure at Hoffenheim when they first got promoted in 2009. And with Leipzig, they've invested in a 35 million euro training centre. They've got a massive catchment area, you know, 1.5 million metro population in Leipzig itself, and pretty much the whole of East Germany, of those who are not of Dresden or whatever.
There's a lot of South Berlin who's probably would end up going to games as well.
The foundations are there, and you look at the room for growth. I mean, it's just hard to see past them being a big institution for a long time. And you look at what they've done in hockey, for example. I think that's probably the best case scenario. Actually, I was doing a bit of research today, and the owner of Red Bull said as early as like 2012 that Red Bull's HQ for football was never going to be in Salzburg. So, sorry, Red Bull Salzburg fans, but that's been happening for a few years. But I think with hockey, it's a bit different. With the Red Bull team there in Munich, they have so much potential. There's talk of them even teaming up with Bayern to build their own kind of indoor stadium.
Mm.
I mean, I just think the game has changed so quickly, and Red Bull get it. Red Bull get it. I think if you look at what they do outside of football, the investments they make in esports, in skateboarding, in all these kind of extreme sports, the marketing they do, it's aggressive, it's morally questionable, but it works. It works. And I just think they're going to be around for a long, long time. And I think what's different about them and Hoffenheim were a club that existed for a long time. I think people think that they're a new club. They're not. They've been around for, you know, a long time. But they didn't have a catchment area. They didn't have a massive hardcore fan base.
You know that quite well.
Yeah, today. I know.
And yesterday you were in Hoffenheim.
I went to Sinsheim and Sosenhausen. And yeah, I mean,
you managed to get lost in a town.
Yeah, there's just nobody there. There's nobody lives there. I got followed by a dog at one point. I mean, that's the kind of...
And you're saying there's no real evidence of the football club being there, is there?
No, it's just like, they have like this training centre just in the middle of nowhere. I mean, I don't want to be disrespectful to Hoffenheim for that, but it genuinely is.
Mm.
And so I understand why they don't have a really core, hardcore fan base, whereas with Leipzig, they've got a massive area of people who are hungry for football, and it just works. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the solution. Everything is going in their favour. I know that's an easy thing to say right now because they're playing so well, but all of those factors, I think, are what's going to make them a serious club for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd agree with most of that.
What do you disagree with?
Well, it's really hard to really... I'm still quite reserved in saying this team itself. I'm really not sure where this team can go because... They do have a number of outstanding players with huge amount of potential, but I still do think it's quite top heavy. I still think they're playing with an enthusiasm and morale that really pushes them on an extra level. I still think at one point they're going to come down. They're going to have to start coming back down to earth. Now Leipzig might go on and spend another 30 million in January, and then they might solve that problem quite easily. But this actual squad that Hasenhüttl's really got work into, like at the minute, I think Leipzig, well, this would have been a much better point to make if they hadn't lost or if they haven't dropped points, you know, in the weekend there. But I think up until very recently, I guess Hasenhüttl's got his team playing like 110%, and most teams probably play about 70 or 80%. And I want to see what Leipzig look like when they're playing 70%, which is probably what's going to happen eventually. Although they're having a winter break, so maybe they'll regalvanise, they'll regenerate themselves and be back at it when we start off in the second half of the season. But that's kind of besides the point, because we're not really talking about whether this team can challenge Bayern, we're talking about whether this club can challenge Bayern. And I think everything does seem to be going their way. I think in Leipzig, you make a really good point. If the whole Germany can hate RB Leipzig if they want, but as long as the city love them, then it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If they've got 50, 60, as you say, maybe even 75,000 people behind them every week, they don't care if people don't like them. And that is the kind of foundation blocks you need. As we mentioned at the start of the podcast, that's the kind of thing that if you're a Stuttgart, for example, and you go down, you still have those foundations there, because you need to have the support to give you something to think that you're pushing towards something else. What I'm interested in seeing is, come summer, when the likes of Man City and Barcelona and stuff start looking at maybe players like Forsberg or Timo Werner. Keita is probably the most obvious one, perhaps. He looks like a real star, and he looks like a Premier League player in the making.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
what happens when these players start getting 30, 40 million pound bids put in their place in Leipzig? Now, this is where it would be really interesting to see what happens. If Leipzig turn around and say, no, we don't need it, we get our money from RB, we're not really interested in making money off these players, they hold on to them, and they go down a path that I just suggested Dortmund should be doing, where they're quite stubborn in the market.
Yeah.
They don't sell them unless the player finds some way of, you know, I don't even know, they find some way of making sure they can leave one way or another, or they just run out of the contract. If that's the way to go down it, then I can be like, right, these guys are serious contenders. They're going to be start buying serious players. They're in the Champions League. And then that's when, you know, they begin to look like a team who can challenge Bayern Munich on and off the park. If they don't, then they might find themselves in a very similar cycle to Dortmund are right now, where I agree with you, Ralf Rangnick and even Ralf Hasenhüttl both look like two men who know exactly what they're doing with youth players, with young players. But if they're going to continue, you know, feeding that cycle with more and more young players, which is quite easy to do in Germany, but then, you know, they have to keep feeding it because they keep selling players when they get to 25, 26, 27, then they're going to be no better than Dortmund, and they're going to be a team who just join the ranks of third, fourth place teams like Gladbach and Schalke and Leverkusen. So that's my one.
Sure.
Concern, I guess I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot would depend on, you know, what they do in the next 6 months in the Bundesliga, and then if they get into the Champions League, I think that would be enough to keep players like that. I mean, that extra finance, it's like, it's not really going to impact on Red Bull's finances like it might do with Volkswagen and Wolfsburg, but I think that might give them that extra financial power to say, right, Man City want to buy Naby Keita for 40 million. We're going to bump up his contract this round and say, look, well, you're going to stay for another couple of years and then we'll let you go when we've got enough out of you. Like I said, I mean, I just think the foundations are there for them to be around for a long, long time. I know that's very depressing for the purists, but yeah, that's the reality.
But if they are and they're genuine contenders, then it's a good thing for the league, you know? Even if they're not, maybe if they haven't done the right way, then it's still good to see the league.
Yeah, maybe. I think that's a good argument, like a good point to make. That I think for me, the Bundesliga's USP was always the 50+1, the tradition, that kind of element to it. The difference between Leipzig and Leverkusen and Wolfsburg and Hoffenheim is that, like you said, I mean, if the city backs Leipzig, which already is unanimously, then they're going to have a really good fan base in years to come. I mean, people are talking about the here and now. But what about in 5 years' time? What about in 10 years' time? What about in 20 years' time? If they have a 75,000-seater stadium, if they do kind of catch on to all these kids who are going to the games, they're going to have a fan base for years to come, whether you like it or not. And, you know, people complain, oh, well, they've got no history. Well, 100 years ago, Dortmund didn't have any history. 100 years ago, Schalke didn't have any history. And that's just the way it works. Let's if move on to another team, though, and I tipped them to finish second by Leverkusen. I'm not sure we're necessarily going to put them in the Bayern Chasers category, but I'd love to hear what you think about, you know, what position they're in. Or do they have the potential to compete with Bayern in the long term? I mean, what do they have to do to be a solid and established team at the top of the league? Because right now, they look very unstable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we can really consider Leverkusen as a team with the resources of Dortmund or even maybe even Leipzig now.
But consistently in the Champions League, signing top players.
Yeah, but you also have to consider that I think there's a kind of common misconception that Leverkusen get a blank check from Bayer every season. And as far as I can tell, and as far as I've been told, that's just simply not the case. Their budget in the Bundesliga is maybe the sixth or seventh highest in terms of how much you spend wages, in terms of the players they buy. The thing that keeps Leverkusen as one of the contenders in the top four and a team that have, over the last 10 years, actually done better in the Champions League than Dortmund in terms of coefficients is the fact that they have the perfect they have the right structure in place and the right individuals in place. I think like people like Jonas Bolt, I think even Roger Schmidt, even though he has his issues, the team, and then Michael Schada, who's a German, I think it's Michael. I just think Leverkusen are probably running as well as they can be, if I'm being honest with you. Now, they could be doing better on the pitch, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't ever see them really challenging Bayern in the long term. Maybe one season when they really hit the ground running and everything's clicking well. I mean, they've got great players, don't get me wrong. Chicharito is a good striker, he's a great striker. I actually genuinely think Kevin Campbell might be turning into one of the best players in the league, if I'm being honest with you. I really do.
Yeah.
Which I never thought I'd say when he was at Dortmund. But he's really becoming Mr. Leverkusen. And I think they do. I mean, they are, don't get me wrong, they are one of the big clubs in Germany. And you kind of forget that when you're in Germany, because people don't like talking about Leverkusen. They don't have a big fan support. They don't have a big stadium. It's a nice stadium. But they don't have a big stadium. And even in this part of the world we live in Bonn, you hear much more about Cologne. You hear much more about Gladbach. And then it's Dortmund Schalke.
But that's a big difference between them and Leipzig, is that they have a stadium of 30,000.
Mm.
And, okay, they'll sell out for the odd Champions League game, but not every week in the Bundesliga. Whereas Leipzig potentially could go to 60, 70,000 and yeah. sell out every week.
I think, yeah, and I think Leverkusen know that. I think ultimately they're quite happy being a team challenging for top four. And I think a top four spot. I mean, if Leverkusen finished sixth this season, Roger Schmidt might not keep his job, but I wouldn't see that as the club doing really badly. Maybe that might just be them sitting in their off spot. The last team you could probably touch on before we wrap this up, Ross, is of course the mighty Royal Blues. Schalke of Gelsenkirchen. They're a team on the up, but how far is up?
Well, I think we've talked about it before, that Schalke has the raw foundations to be a really good contender to Bayern Munich. They have a great fan base. They have a really loyal fan base. They also have probably the best youth academy in Germany. They have a great stadium, I think, they're close to paying it off completely in terms of the renovations that they made to it. So this club has got real potential. I mean, the problem for Schalke in the last 10 years has been just the instability, the bad management from the top, the sporting directors before, they've had so many coaches. But now, I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing, given that they were 12 games unbeaten. I personally, during the time when they were 5 games without a win, said that I think they've made a great decision bringing in Christian Heidel as the sporting director. He's a very, very astute guy, I think he gets it. Markus Weinziel, one of the best coaches in Germany. The way that their scouting works now is that they're not sending, you know, scouts internationally. They're doing it all from Gelsenkirchen, but they're going through every market possible. They're really clever in that respect. The players that they've signed this year have worked out to be really well, I think, other than Mbolo, who obviously has been injured. And
that's a good point, actually, because I just to cut off there, at the start of the season, I actually made a comment saying that they just picked up a bunch of players off the transfer lists.
Mm.
And someone made this point to me on Twitter a month ago, maybe saying, you know, you said they signed these guys because they're easy to sign, but they've all done really well. Mm. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I was proved completely wrong by the likes of Bentaleb and these guys.
Yeah.
And the guy from Schalke, whose name I still can't pronounce.
Konoplyanka.
Yeah, so you're right, yeah. The transfers have been
exciting. I don't want to read too much. I don't want to read too much into the game against Leverkusen on Sunday, although they lost 1-0, but the way that that team was really united for the manager...
After going to Mandel.
Yeah, I mean, I've never, ever seen Schalke do that. And I think that is more powerful than anything else. You can talk about signing the best players, but if you have that strategy and culture and all that kind of thing, I think you can go really far. And yeah, the big caveat here with Schalke is that they need to get back into the Champions League. Through the league, I think that's going to be really difficult. It's not impossible, because it's so competitive between 1st and 7th and 8th. The Europa League might be the avenue that they can get back into the Champions League.
By winning
it, they're good enough to do that. And I think when they play at home at the Veltins, I think they've got a great advantage there. If they can get back into the Champions League, then I think sky's the limit for them.
Yeah. I mean, any coach who can make Naldo look good is obviously... contender, but no, I totally agree with you actually in the terms that they obviously have the raw potential there. They've got a guy in Christian Heidel who knows what he's doing. Weinziel as well. It's really, really interesting how they did go through this real rut at the start of the season. Mm-hmm. It almost seemed like they had to go through it to get through it, and they were undefeated in the Europa League until the last game, group stage, which didn't count because they'd already qualified like 2 or 3 games beforehand. And they have been outstanding in the league so far. Referee decisions aside, they really should be much further up. And as we've seen so far in the league, anything can happen. Teams are going up and down. We've got a whole bunch of teams at the top who shouldn't be there, a whole bunch of teams at the bottom who shouldn't be there, and Schalke are right in the middle, not too far off Leverkusen. In fact, I think it might be up. No, they would have been above Leverkusen if they'd beaten them on Sunday there. So I can't disagree with you. I think maybe before Heidel came in, I think it was a very obvious reason why they weren't hitting their top. They still do have the chairman, whose name I forgot now,
Tonis,
who I'm still not 100% sure of. He seems to be quite an erratic guy.
Yeah, I mean, there was a picture of him in with the fans drinking beer and all that kind of thing, so he clearly isn't
That's kind good.
Of an he's not your ordinary executive. I understand that a lot of fans are against him, but at the end of the day, if Heidel and Weinzierl work together, and the players work together, then what he does is inconsequential, I think.
Yeah, although it's also worth noting there's a lot of players that run out of contract in this season. Shout, Kolasinac is an obvious one. Choupo-Moting's out, both of them out this summer. Maier and Goretzka this next summer, I think. So be interested to see what they do in January, actually, because they've got a lot of business to tie up before they can start thinking. And then Bentaleb, who they want, I think he has a release clause, which is maybe in the region of maybe 20 million euros, I think. So they've got a lot of business they have to do in their own squad before they can start looking elsewhere. And that will be really vital, because it's all well and good, you know, Weinzierl coming in and making a huge difference, but if they're going to lose like Kolasinac this summer, then someone like Meyer Goretzka or Bentaleb next, then it's almost for nothing, you know. So again, it comes back to how these clubs are run, and that's all the fun of the Bundesliga. But before we wrap that up, it's probably worth noting that a few of the topics we've discussed this tonight we've already covered in even more depth in our specific episodes that we did at the very start. So if you're listening to this podcast, do go onto our feed and scroll to the very first few episodes, and those were individual specific topics we did talk about. One of the, I think the first one maybe was why the Bayern players, or why the Dortmund players keep moving to Bayern. We covered Schalke, you know, are they the Bundesliga's sleeping giants? We had Uli Hesse on to talk about that. We had Sandra on to talk about Dortmund. And we really did cover these in extensive coverage. So if you guys do want to hear more, you can of course go back there and pick them up. They're only a couple of months old, so it shouldn't be too much change. But yeah, until that...
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap, as ever. You guys know where you can get us on Twitter and Facebook at the Tribune Podcast on each. And of course, if you're enjoying these podcasts, please do give us a ratings. Give us a 5-star rating and leave some comments on iTunes.
Yeah, bump it up. Let's hack the system.
Hack the system.
Yeah, let's do a Red Bull and hack the system and get us up.
Well, in the true nature of 2016, it's causing upset, right?
Yeah.
So everyone get up, get us on iTunes. And of course, on your Android, all those devices have ratings and stuff as well. They make a big difference to us as well. And we love to hear your feedback on Twitter and Facebook. There's nothing better than when, like, we do a podcast and we get people on Twitter saying, I agreed with you in this. Stefan, you're an idiot. Ross, I hate you. I mean, that's just us talking to each other.
I don't get a lot of hate, but from you especially.
Yeah, I get a lot of hate. So yeah, thanks very much, and we'll speak to you next week.